Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Adam Mattis. I almost called you Pete.
That would have been great.
You have me recording at 9:30 in the morning. This is not hours that I usually am trying to be entertaining at.
But you know what? Very shortly, it's going to be an hour. You've been up for like 3 hours here once you have a little one in your life. This will be like midday for you.
Yeah, this will be. Yeah, I'm not ready. I'm not ready at all. I keep on trying to tell myself that I'm ready, but I'm not ready at all. I'm not even a little bit. I'm
going to keep telling you that you're not ready.
It's funny.
Can't wait for this.
It's my favorite thing lately has been parents going like, "Oh yeah, you'll be fine," and you can just see it in their eyes that they're lying. Like, oh, it's not that bad. You'll be okay. I'm like, you liars. You're all lying. Today's show. The reason I'm talking to Adam today for the show was we're going to kick off our series in which we pit the Lakers against the other, I would say, seven title favorites that I kind of consider legitimate title hopefuls this year.
Would you say we're going to kick it off or tip it off?
You know, we're in the off season, so and honestly, soccer has been more interesting this off season. Like,
okay,
so we'll go kick. We'll go kick.
All right,
but I understand what you're trying to do. Yeah. I consider the Nuggets to be the best team in the West right now. That's why we are starting this series with the Nuggets, because quite frankly, I consider them maybe the best team in the league. So no pressure.
This is like such classic Anthony. You're going to build them up so much. And then like when they're the three seed, you're like, I don't know what happened. What a disappointment. They're going to have like a franchise record 60 wins. They'd be like, man, what a down year for them. I expected more.
Yeah, they're going to have 60 wins and lose in the second round.
Yeah, sounds about right.
What I find interesting, let me know what you think about this. We'll get, you know, a little bit more specific into matchups and stuff as we go through the show. But I kind of see the Nuggets and the Lakers as bad matchups for each other. But I don't know who really gets the nod in a seven-game series. So if the Lakers were to play a one-game series or you know, just a single regular season game against the Denver Nuggets, I think the Nuggets should be the favorites in all of those games. But come playoff time, I don't know how I feel about that matchup in a seven-game series.
Yeah, I think LeBron this last year, one of the interesting questions for this whole NBA season is last year was LeBron's first like failure of his career, really the last, I don't know, 15 years, mm-hmm. 10 years, whatever it's been, since he's been on top. So the big question is like, was that they obviously threw in the towel early when it was clear they weren't going to make it. So they were probably several wins better than they were. But one of the big questions is just, is LeBron still LeBron? Because if he is, then I think it's a very easy answer actually, yeah, about which team would win in a playoff series. It's the guy who won 9 years in a row in the playoffs or whatever it was. So that's the big question. But if there is a significant drop off with LeBron, then I do think you look at it and say, okay, there's a lot here. LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Nikola Jokic, far and away the best players between the two teams. Mm-hmm. After that, you know, I think Denver takes the lead for a majority of the next several guys. But
what
you know,
I'm not going to tolerate this show is Alex Caruso slander.
Hey, I love Caruso.
Me too.
That's my dude. I was really hoping the Lakers would have to move him to like clear more cap space or something.
No, I agree though. I would say it probably goes Jokic and LeBron in some order, then Davis. And then...
Oh man, we're already in disagreement. I said we're already in disagreement. I think Anthony Davis, I've kind of talked myself into this over the last couple weeks. I think Anthony Davis is set for an MVP year.
I kind of want to see it first before I put him there, though. Like, it's not just Davis's control. Is LeBron willing to put him in that kind of situation? Is he willing to elevate Davis into that MVP conversation? Until I see it, then then, you know, then I'll be cool with making that leap. I think it's a perfectly fair leap. I'm just not quite ready to do it. The plantar fasciitis that I'm dealing with is also preventing me from doing anything physical. But yeah, I mean, you go from those three. Jamal Murray is probably better than just about anybody on the roster. Gary Harris is probably better than just about anybody else on the roster. Who am I missing? Is that it?
I'm trying to look at who the next best player. I mean, DeMarcus Cousins is a wild card because Obviously at his peak, he's really, really good. But, you know, who knows what he'll be this upcoming season. But, yeah, I mean, you just look at the Nuggets with Gary Harris, Malik Beasley, who shot 40% last year, Paul Millsap, Jeremy Grant, Monte Morris, who was second all-time, had the second best all-time assist-to-turnover ratio. Denver just has a lot of – like, if you compare the – third best players, the fourth best players, fifth best players, sixth, seventh, eighth. Denver's going to win a lot of those.
Yeah,
a lot of those matchups. But one and two, that's an awfully good 1-2 punch.
That's usually what matters in a playoff series too.
Correct.
So let's take a quick second here. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about some of the things that both teams do that I think give each other a tough time in ways that a lot of the matchups that they go up against aren't going to. So hang tight. We're going to get a little bit more specific, a little bit more into the weeds with this matchup. So it's tough to analyze or take much from last year's Lakers team to this year's Lakers team because last year's roster was such an abomination. It made so little sense that it's really hard to analyze anything moving forward from it. But, you know, one of the things that they had a tough time dealing with was pick and pop bigs and bigs who handle the ball at like the free throw line area and create from there. Jokic is still there.
First of all, I think the whole league struggles with that. So yeah. we kind of get in this habit of talking about the league is evolving to a point where if you have the proper skilled players at the right areas, then there's certain actions that just aren't guardable. Yeah. And I think Denver's one of them. And a lot of people thought, well, in the playoffs, you know, teams will adjust because the style they play is so unique. No, it's unique, and it's because it's really hard to guard a center at the 3-point line who can play point.
Mm-hmm.
So.
That's where, and the other thing too that makes Jokic a singularly tough matchup is that he's a big center who can do those things.
Right. Yep. Yeah, you can't just put a small guy on him and say, okay, well, we matched, because then he goes to the block.
Right. So, and you know, Davis, as Pete has said a few times on this show, doesn't particularly enjoy going up against guys who have a size advantage against him. You know,
yeah.
So maybe you say, you know, Boogie kind of guards Jokic if he drops below the free throw line, and Davis is the focus. You know, takes the defensive motions that involve Jokic when he's above the free throw line. But it's still kind of complicated to do all that stuff on the fly, right? But that said, Denver, I still don't really see. Maybe Jeremy Grant, maybe is the guy who. You know, you hope to slow down LeBron a little bit, but
LeBron, yeah. Okay, right. I thought you were going to say Jeremy Grant on Anthony Davis. The combination of Millsap and Grant, I think that's a really good, you know, that's good for Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis is going to score on everybody, so there's no stopping him. But that's two guys that can do a good job. But LeBron, I don't think there's a single player on Denver's roster that comes from. And Jeremy Grant is not that dude.
So which advantage do you think scares the other team more?
Oh, it's got to be LeBron. I mean, LeBron is the guy that has proven to be able to take his team to a championship, and he's a guy that has made elite defenders look ridiculous. And Denver does not. There's the one weakness. What I like about this NBA season is that every great team has like a major glaring flaw. Like this Clippers team doesn't have a center
A creator. I'm still waiting. they need a point guard who can get other people's shots. Do you think a single Clipper will average 5 assists this year?
That's a fun one. Man, that's a fun. Yeah, I'll say yes.
Maybe it's Paul George, right? Maybe.
Man, is he the leading candidate?
But yeah, no, I agree completely with your overall assessment though about all of these title contenders have that fatal flaw.
And Denver's fatal flaw is just that they don't have any wings. I think they have a great backcourt. Gary Harris, Jamal Murray, great. Malik Beasley, Monte Morris behind him, great for the backup there. Power forwards. Jokic and Millsap are phenomenal. Like they're together, they're a plus 10 net rating or whatever last year. I mean, for 2 years, they've been phenomenal. And then Mason Plumlee and Jeremy Grant behind him, I think, are as good as any backup 4 or 5. But their three situation is really bad. It's almost like you go to the NBA 2K store and you spend all your money on your 1, 2, 4, and 5. It's like, we're out of money. All right, what are we going to do? Well, it's Michael Porter Jr. hasn't played in 2 years. Maybe he's good.
Build a lineup with $15 and you spent $14. Exactly. On everybody 100%. Else. Yeah.
And you're looking down there at the small forwards and you're like, I don't know. And so I think against a lot of teams, it's okay. That matches up perfectly unless your best player happens to be your small forward. Well, the Lakers, they fit that bill.
Yeah. Well, the irony here is that, like, technically LeBron's probably better at the four anyway, right? And that's where Paul Millsap.
It doesn't matter. When we talk about these positions, the one thing we mean is a big body. So not like a guard, but a big bodied player who plays on the perimeter. That's really what we're talking about.
Yeah. I agree because LeBron is proven, though this is the year that proven word is doing a lot of work, right? That's where, you know, we've seen LeBron do these things and we've seen him take over, especially a team that doesn't have as good a matchup for him as the Nuggets are put in that situation right now. But, you know, it's hard to exercise the demons in my mind of watching Mario Hezonja block LeBron on a game deciding play. You know, those are images that I can't quite knock out of my mind. Now, do I think LeBron is going to be better this year than he was last year as he was trying to deal with an injury he's never had to deal with? Yeah, I would say so. And I think one of the things that I really think is getting kind of overlooked is how rested Davis and LeBron are going to be compared to previous seasons. I mean, they aren't playing in FIBA stuff. They didn't play in – Davis played, 56 games, I think, last year. LeBron was in that same kind of area. Neither played in the playoffs, obviously. So and then, you know, you look at Denver, and how important do you think it is for Denver to get off to a quick start here?
Supremely important, because they have the most continuity in the league by far. You would expect a lot of these teams that first month or so, I think the Lakers are going to come out hot. Just there's a lot of excitement and there's that first week. I think a lot of teams will play well. Clippers, you know, emotional, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think over the next 6 weeks or so, really to about Christmas, I think a lot of teams are going to be figuring things out, rotations, lineups, which guys work, whatever. And Denver, I mean, Denver knows all that stuff. Yeah. Even adding Jeremy Grant, they have players in the past, Kenneth Faried, Mason Plumlee, even, who are similar styles in a lot of ways. So you already kind of know what they're going to look like. So for them, I think by the start of the calendar year, Denver needs to be in first in the Western Conference.
Yeah, I would probably say so. It's less important where the Lakers are kind of sitting in terms of postseason, but I'll say this, and we'll get to some of their matchup stuff, you know, in a playoff series. Denver, I think, has to have home court in this series. Like, if these two teams meet, they have to have home court. I don't know. It's not so much that the Lakers are going to be some incredible home team. It's that the Nuggets rely so heavily on role player shooting that they're going to need that in a big way. And if they don't have it, I don't know how that really looks. Last thing before we go on to the next segment, where I want to look at how both teams can get better over the course of a season, and that'll be the focus of the next segment. But if again these teams meet as they're currently constituted in a playoff series, and they play that series about 100 times, how do you think those 100 series go?
I think the Lakers win most of them. You know, assuming full health from LeBron and Anthony Davis, I think the Lakers probably win 80 of them. I mean,
you think it's that?
I do. For Denver to win, they're going to have a balanced approach, and I think Denver can score on the Lakers. Score on the Lakers. I just don't know if they're ever going to be able to get stops. And when you get down to that crunch time offense, Denver was very good in the playoffs. They're very good in the regular season at that. But I don't know, the 1-5 pick and roll with Anthony Davis at the five is just Denver. They're going to score on that one every single time they can knock down their shots, which will be relatively open.
Yeah. I think so. The big question mark for me, for the Lakers specifically here, is will their shooters be able to shoot? Like last year, last year, all the guys that we hoped that might be able to shoot for the Lakers, they all fell flat on their face, right? Kyle Kuzma's out there working with Carmelo Anthony right now just to maybe get everybody to not look at his basketball reference page.
to me, that's pretty. The entirety of the story, though, because for Denver, you know, the questions are, can Jamal Murray, you know, turn the corner? Can he knock down his shots? But can he turn the corner, get to the rim? Can Jokic, being guarded by Davis and or DeMarcus Cousins, can he get a shot? With the Lakers, it's just, can they make the shot? They're going to get their shots. It's just, can they make them? So that's why, to me, that's one of the landmines for Denver is the Lakers this season in terms of teams I think they really just match up poorly with in a playoff setting.
Yeah, they kind of sort of have to hope that the Lakers are in that 2 or 3 or, what is it, 6 or 7 kind of seed, and the Nuggets are in the 1 spot, or vice versa, right?
Yeah,
They just have to hope that they meet as late in the playoffs as they possibly can. We're going to take a quick second here, and when we come back, I want to talk about how both teams can improve over the course of the year, which is something that is going to be a major trend for all of these title-contending teams. They all have fatal flaws, and if those fatal flaws get addressed, then you start looking at, okay, yeah, they're the bona fide favorite. So hang tight, and we'll talk about how likely it is either team addresses their fatal flaw. So what do you consider the Denver Nuggets' fatal flaw?
It's that small forward position. I really think it's only that. And in particular defensively, because offensively they put out some really nice, basically 3-guard lineups. Will Barton in that spot I think is really good. Michael Porter Jr. could be very good. Hernan Gomez is a knockdown shooter. But all of those guys are huge question marks defensively, in particular against big wings. You know, your Paul Georges, Kawhis, LeBrons, those types.
It's not really for me to agree, but I do agree. I do think for the Lakers, they kind of have the same problem. They don't have a defensive specialist as a wing. And look who's sitting right out there. Both teams, the Lakers, the Nuggets, well, basically everybody, half the league right now, is waiting out Memphis as they dangle Andre Iguodala out there. I don't think the Lakers have the assets if it does come to – I know the Lakers don't have the assets to wow anybody with it. Yeah. So how likely do you think it is that Denver or even the Clippers or somebody just sticks their neck out there and – coughs up the assets necessary to acquire Andre Iguodala? Because that to me swings the playoffs right now. He's a legit piece who would really help all these teams.
It's tough because I think Iguodala fits Denver so perfectly. I mean, it does give him an elite defender. He doesn't have to play a lot of minutes in the regular season. He could have basically his Golden State role where he's cruising
and he's working on his second book.
Yeah, exactly. You know, maybe starting a podcast or something. Like he has a lot, he could really coast and then just be such a huge asset to them in the playoffs. And between his cutting, his ability to knock down the corner three, and then just his high IQ on offense, he would fit in on both ends of the court. So for me, Denver, I really think there's a good chance Denver tries to pursue him, depending on how this whole thing shakes out. The one thing that we've heard is that Memphis wants a first round pick, and Denver has traded next year's and to get Jerami Grant. Because of the step-in rule, they would have to go all the way up into 2022 to do that. And I just think trading draft picks in a small market 3 years out is always so dangerous.
Yeah.
And we've seen it time and time again where a team with a promising, you know, start traded too many draft picks and then it all comes crashing down. So I don't know that they'll trade that, but Denver's going to be a big player at the trade deadline. If not before, because they have Juancho Hernangómez, who almost every team in the league would take, Malik Beasley, who almost every team in the league would take. And as well as players like Bol Bol, Jared Vanderbilt, some end of bet, you know, throw ins to any type of trade with high upside. They just have so many young guys that can't even get in the rotation because Denver has so much young talent. So I do think a consolidation trade happens at some point between now and the deadline, and they have the young pieces for a team like Memphis that would really, really like to get their hands on some of those players.
Yeah, I mean, even if the Nuggets aren't interested in offering up their own first rounder, I think you can flip one of those guys, one or two of those guys for the necessary first rounder there, which – if you're Memphis, like, what's the difference?
to be paid. The one difference is that Juan Chernan Gomez and Malik Beasley, both 40% three-point shooters. Malik Beasley, 6'5", super athlete. I mean, he's the exact type of player every team wants. The only difference is if you get a draft pick, not only do you get to pick your guy, but you get that rookie scale for several years. Malik Beasley next year is in line for an extension, so that's the big difference.
Yeah. The Lakers' fatal flaw, in my opinion, is twofold, right? One, they still need that wing defender, as we just talked about here with Andre Iguodala. And two, I still don't know if you can be a championship contender. I'm sorry to all of the listeners here who are stands for the Bald Eagle. But the Lakers can't win a championship, I don't think, with Alex Caruso as far and away the best point guard on the roster. That makes me a little nervous.
Is he better or worse than Mario Chalmers?
I think they're of similar ilk, but I don't think like the other parts, right? So yes, LeBron isn't as good as that LeBron, and that and then the league also is better now than it was back then.
Agreed.
So if the Lakers now, they used all of their assets to be able to trade for Anthony Davis. And then, you know, the number of picks and the times that they sent out those picks mean that because of the step-in rule, they aren't able to really move first-rounders, even if they wanted to. So I don't really know, you know, what kinds of assets they'll be able to... I do know they don't have any assets that would really interest anybody right now. So the question becomes, what kinds of point guards hit the buyout market? And whether the Lakers become players in that pursuit. Pete is always more optimistic than I am, but he seems to think that there's a scenario here where such a point guard that you're more comfortable with in a playoff setting hits the buyout market. What do you think about that as an option?
Of what?
Of a point guard, like the opportunity that the Lakers might have at adding
who would it be? Are there names on the list? I mean, I'd have to hear a name that's out there, but I don't.
His like
they're just so tight with money that I mean, even if you're talking about a buyout, you're talking about a guy that's long in the tooth, most likely.
Yeah, it would probably his dream scenario that even he will say is pretty outlandish is Kyle Lowry, right?
Yeah, that would be
that maybe he just that Toronto starts slow and he says, you know what, guys, it's time for all of us to move on. We all won our title together. It's time for me to move on.
I mean, this is the type of stuff that only happens for the Lakers. I mean, it's not a realistic scenario, but no, I'm not even saying that facetiously. Yeah. I'm just saying like that's not a realistic scenario. No other team in that position would be like, you know what might happen? This all-star point guard might get bought out and then join our team for very cheap. Like, yeah, and roster building is very similar. You know, maybe that'll happen for Denver too. Paul George doesn't like it there in the Clippers, and maybe he'll get bought out and then signed for Denver on a minimum. Maybe that'll happen. If that happens, the Nuggets might win a champion. This is
According to my mailbags, Chris Paul might forego like $50 million and take him.
Is it more than that?
I mean, yeah, it would be like 100 and something. I don't know what it would be. But yeah, I'm not exactly holding my breath. But you know, of the two teams, we've already talked about how the Nuggets technically do have the assets. So of the two teams, which do you think is likelier to improve their team and address that fatal flaw?
What players are out there for Denver?
Well, no, just like if the Lakers have their two question marks. I think Denver has one. The Lakers have two. Lakers have to address their point guard spot unless Alex Caruso is legitimately a LeBron point guard, right?
Which that's what I was going to say. Could be the case. Could. I mean, he
might happen.
He didn't shoot a ton of threes last year, so the sample 50 total. So the sample size is super small. But you know, I do think if he can just be a 40% knockdown 3-point shooter and then guard his position well enough, that's all you need. And this, when you're talking point guards, you know, more likely for me would be names, maybe like a DJ Augustine caliber player. You probably want taller than that, but just some kind of guard that okay, you knock down your shots, you can bring the ball up the court, you can run a little bit of pick and roll action, especially with Anthony Davis. I mean, how easy does it have to be?
Yeah.
And then just knock down your shot. So it might not even have to be a true point guard. It could be a bit more of a combo guard, because really the only ball handling you need is to be able to bring the ball up the court so LeBron doesn't have to do that every time.
Yeah.
He gets the ball on the elbows or on the wing anytime. Like, you dribble the ball up, you run an action, then you get it to LeBron. And then it's basically the job of the point guard for a LeBron offense is get to, like, ball, give him a seven-second rest. Like, LeBron, go rest. You got 7 seconds before I get up there. Like, okay, here you go.
One thing that shouldn't be important but is the politics of the point guard that they add, right? Like, I don't think LeBron is holding his breath in excitement to get to play and see how Alex Caruso grows over the course of the year, right? Like, that's why Rajon Rondo was on the roster, is because all these guys are like, oh yeah, I don't know that guy's name, but I know Rondo, like, he's had like 3 good playoff games. He's great. So that's the, you know, but you know, so I, to get us back to the subject though, the Nuggets technically have the assets. It's a matter of whether or not they're willing to stick their necks out there and actually do what it takes to secure an Iguodala. The Lakers don't have the assets, but, you know, sometimes have access to moves that other teams might not because they're the Lakers. So which team do you think is more likely to address that flaw? Like, if Iguodala,
I still think it's Denver. And Iguodala is an interesting one because I think he's so perfect for that role. Yeah. But at the same time, he's on a last year of his deal. He's old. He's not part of any type of long-term plan.
It's, I wouldn't literally want whatever Iguodala you trade on this year.
What's that?
I wouldn't want Iguodala pass this year. I think
what I'm saying is you almost certainly trade things that could be useful in the future, like now and in the future. Malik Beasley, Wancho, first round pick, whatever it is. But you get something that expires on whatever day you're eliminated from the playoffs or win a championship. I think Denver has other options. I mean, there's players like Robert Covington that maybe they're, I mean, what is Minnesota's plan, especially if they're not a playoff contender this year? Is he a guy that by the trade deadline's on the block? He, not only does he sort of fit the same niche, but he is a guy that could play for you next year and not just disappear. So I think that's probably more in line with what Denver's thinking is. They would love Iguodala if the price is right. But if not, at the trade deadline, there's going to be other options that maybe are 95% of what Iguodala offers.
Yeah. If Iguodala hits the open market, I think I don't think Denver has a chance to sign him. You know, I think he winds up with the Lakers. Mm. But, you know, you never know on those things. I have Covington. I'm really watching Covington going to Golden State because Minnesota really, really wants D'Angelo Russell. Yeah. It just seems like there's the beginnings of a trade there. This is the thing you and I fight about tooth and nail. Almost every time we see each other, we talk about the Nuggets or any small market team in general, is you guys are right there. The point of doing all of this is to win a championship. And yes, that includes some risk every so often. And that means if like Wancho Hernan Gomez, if I was to find out that a player like that was getting in the way of my team making themselves I don't think he would be
in the way though. First round pick is the thing that's in the way.
Well, no, I mean, so it would be like, all right, can you trade those guys for a first round pick, and then can you flip that first round pick to get Andre Iguodala?
Yeah. Yeah,
like that's, if I was to find out that those players were getting in the way of making my team the outright favorite, I would go bananas. But that's because I've grown up a Laker fan where they've done that kind of a thing.
And also the bottom of the barrel for Lakers fans is never as dire as it is for the Nuggets. I mean, the Nuggets have bottomed out before in ways that have cost 10 years. You know, breaks didn't work out. The 90s, the Nuggets had a great young core. They had 2 players tear their knees in the summer, not even in the season. And then you look at it and you go, man, we just went all in. And now we have like 8 years before we have a first round. So things are a little bit different for small markets in that risk. And I think with Iguodala, though, here's the one thing. Iguodala succeeded with the Warriors in large part because he could coast for so long and then play in the playoffs. And,
yeah,
you know, Denver, if the Nuggets had Iguodala, would you pick them to beat a Lakers in a series, or would you say it's a coin flip?
I'd probably pick them.
I think it becomes a coin flip. And they,
Maybe you and I are just different. We have different stances on Iguodala, but I really think that Iguodala would make a huge difference for, because you're talking about somebody who not only fits the stereotype.
You remember that he was here, though, right? Other aspect of it is he was here in Denver and departed on not such great terms. So there's also this, like, Denver. Would he want to be here? He did say he likes the city, and I think a lot of his complaints were with George Karl, so you never know, but it is a little weird in that regard.
But we talked about LeBron having that proven, you know,
Quite a Dwight situation.
What's that?
I said, it's not quite a Dwight Howard situation.
Yeah, he's just not welcome in Los Angeles. Like, he has to go into witness protection when his whatever team. Well, he won't be on a team this year, but he's not really allowed to play in Staples Center. I don't think he really gives away where he's staying. But with Iguodala, though, we talked about LeBron's resume and his ability to and you know, his history, his track record of beating all these teams. Iguodala has that same kind of resume in playoff runs that is also something that really matters. So, yes, Robert Covington might offer up, you know, a percentage of what Iguodala offers, but he doesn't quite have that pedigree. He doesn't quite have that track record either. So that, you know, I just... That, to me, whoever gets Iguodala, that's going to swing this season. I really think so.
Here's the other thing for Denver. There's two things. One, Will Barton was their starting small forward last year, and all of the numbers had said that he was a phenomenal fit there. Defensively, they take a lot back, but they just were a dynamic offensive group with him. He gets hurt in game two. And I think they look at it and go, like, we haven't actually seen this lineup. Michael Porter Jr., they see as the small forward of the future for the team. I mean, we'll see what he is, but they really believe in him. So I think Denver has a lot of, we feel like we have a great group already. We just haven't had a chance to see it. And if they see it and by the trade deadline it doesn't look good, then I think they do make a decision and pivot. But I just think they believe in the group that they have. And they won 54 games, by the way, without Will Barton and without Gary Harris for a large part of the season. So I think they have I understand their thinking that they actually have the pieces in place that they need.
Yeah, I'm cool with them waiting. As a Laker fan, I'm cool with them waiting. Wait as long as you have to. You know, never address it. Do your thing. You just stick by your guns, Tim Connelly.
Fair enough.
That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Thanks very much for hopping on, Adam. This was fun, even if you made me record at 9:30 in the morning.
Good morning, Anthony.
This is going to, like I said, kick off the entire series. So we're going to cover all of the teams. I want to go to the Eastern Conference and get into Milwaukee and get into the Philadelphia 76ers. In the West, we have obviously the Clippers, the Warriors, and the Rockets. This was episode one of the series. If you guys enjoyed it, let me know in the iTunes reviews. If you have questions, let me know in the form of a 5-star review, and I'll answer those. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. I'll talk to you tomorrow.